Welcome to this Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. I'm with Alexandra Channer, Human Rights Strategy Lead with Verisk Maplecroft. Welcome, Alexandra.
Hi, Ian. Nice to be here.
We're going to be talking about human rights risks and emerging challenges. So with the changing legislative landscapes we're seeing around the world, what are the challenges that you're seeing emerging for companies having to grapple with the regulation?
In our perspective, there's this really very diverse and dense patchwork of laws, voluntary standards, and then also reporting requirements that are emerging across the world. And obviously, they maybe focus on different human rights issues and require business to take different steps. So we've got this pattern of disclosure laws, particularly around modern slavery in the US and the UK, coming up in Australia, maybe even in New Zealand. We've got due diligence laws in France and the Netherlands. Got ESG reporting requirements coming down through the Sustainable Stock Exchange Initiative. And then we've got some quite kind of unique approaches like the Canadian Ombudsperson with, you know, really powerful investigatory mandate to look at specific sectors, so extractives or apparel. So there's kind of a lot going on, and these are kind of key pressure points that are all funneling business towards human rights due diligence. You know, the big challenge that we're seeing for business is that because they are different, and some of these laws, especially the French legislation, talk about a concept of reasonable due diligence and require you to effectively implement. You know, the challenge for business is trying to work out what good looks like. So how do you know what the threshold is when you're taking reasonable due diligence, or when perhaps you've crossed the border over towards negligence? The difficulty that we see is, so first of all, you know, there's no one size fits all. What's appropriate for a low risk sector won't be adequate for a high risk sector. So if you're talking about modern slavery and perhaps you're in professional services, the type of risk assessment and due diligence procedures you need to take will be more limited than those that you would expect a fruit producing firm to be taking, or an apparel firm.
So let's perhaps come back to due diligence in a second. Let's start off with thinking around what risk management strategy really looks like. So from your perspective, what does a good modern slavery risk management strategy look like from the start?
So there are three things that we kind of really emphasise for our clients. The first thing would be to check that you've got an effective system in place, so that your risk management system is working. And so that's where we do a gap assessment. So we look at all the policies and procedures that you've got. We benchmark them against international standards so that we know your standards are fit for purpose. And we would also check that they're working, they're effective. So that means that whatever decisions you take or policies you implement, you know that you can actually enforce them. The second thing would be to assess your risks. You know, it depends obviously on the maturity of the system you've got in place and how far you are along this journey. At the first step, that means a high risk scan of your suppliers by location, or by industry or commodity. And basically you're trying to simplify your risks and then work out where you're going to focus your limited resources and your people to address your human rights risks. And then the third element would be training. So that means priority focusing first on your own employees so that you're equipping them with the skills to understand human rights risks and then implement the plans that you're going to put in place. And then as you go deeper into the process, you'd probably be wanting to train your suppliers as well so that they understand your code of conduct and that they've got the skills themselves to comply with it.
Typically, though, do you find that modern slavery comes up or appears in parts of supply chains that weren't initially regarded as high risk?
A lot of the development of due diligence has been in reaction to events that have come up in the media or been highlighted by journalists or organisations on the ground. And generally, that has happened deeper down the supply chain. So I think that's why a lot of companies have started to look at commodity risk assessments, which sort of cover the blank spots in their supply chain. So they might not have mapped all the way down to source. And so that's driving them to approach things from the other way around as well. And that can only be a good thing.
I mean, obviously, supply chains can be massive. Is it a good technique to kind of take a single supply chain and map it all the way down to source? Or is it better to try to take a kind of view across the entirety of supply chains?
The focus always has to be a risk-based approach. So you would begin by risk mapping your entire supply chain and working out where you think the potential human rights impacts are greatest. And that's where you should then be digging deeper. Let's say for a lot of companies, that could be palm oil, and they might have, you know, Unilever has now mapped their whole palm oil supply chain, because they identified that that's where some of their human rights abuses and deforestation risks were the greatest. Or let's say you've got conflict minerals in your supply chain, then that would be somewhere that you'd be doing a much deeper dive. So it really depends on this risk-based approach and deciding where the human rights impacts are the greatest.
Your business and you're engaging and mapping your supply chain. What are the tricks to deliver on regulatory requirements efficiently?
These three steps, I think, are the key elements to comply efficiently. So a high-level risk assessment, a gap assessment of your management efficiency, and then training of some sort. And then also it's about turning that into information that the public and civil society can understand and assess, and not just them, also investors. So the kind of second big challenge that we see for business is turning practical due diligence and the steps that you take on the ground into data, especially social metrics that can be used by organizations that are assessing business and particularly investors to inform their decisions. So I think that's the next big step. And that is a considerable challenge, but there's lots of organizations doing interesting work on it. So, you know, the GRI and Shift has a collaboration project that they've set up over the next 3 years, looking particularly about how we can produce better data about human rights due diligence.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it? That it's just been very hard traditionally to get data and metrics that really make sense around social issues. For you, what are the techniques or the ways that businesses should approach data points around social issues that really can enable them to make sense for them and for their stakeholders?
Having simple and clear KPIs is a good approach. So that means that the data that you report is easy for people to understand. And that could be as simple as reporting the number of audits conducted, the number of violations identified, the number of violations remediated, number of suppliers trained, just sort of very straightforward information that helps people immediately to understand the steps you're taking and how deep you're going. KPIs that are directly linked to your risks and the steps that you're taking to mitigate them.
And don't be afraid of using simple data and reporting in simple data, because sometimes that can be quite effective. We've talked a lot about due diligence. What does due diligence really mean then in this changing context? Can you give us any examples of the sort of behaviour that you classify as good due diligence?
A company that is working with the UNGP framework. So they are making sure that they've made policy commitments, they've assessed their risks, thinking about the severity of human rights impacts and not just about the relevance to business, that they're acting on those, integrating them, monitoring what they're doing to make sure that it's actually working, and then reporting. So definitely keeping in line with that UNGP framework, and then also using all the resources out there that are being developed, because as we work out what good due diligence means, it's going to come through practice. So that means that when companies are implementing this, they're going to be learning on the ground and hopefully sharing that experience with their peers. And then also there are going to be organizations that are benchmarking them and working out what they think is good. So corporate human rights benchmark would be a good example of that. And then other organizations that are assessing how they report against particular frameworks like the GRI. So it's this whole organic development through practice that is going to get us closer to what good due diligence looks like. And then obviously there are going to be some companies that unfortunately experience this through court procedures. And I think the most interesting space to watch there will be this French due diligence law, because it particularly talks about effectively implementing a due diligence plan and this concept of reasonable due diligence. So for me, that will be an interesting space to watch, because I think the first reports come out this quarter, perhaps, or definitely this year.
That's going to be interesting, isn't it? Thinking also around the kind of changing risks of non-compliance. Do you see emerging risks from non-compliance? I mean, perhaps the risks of non-compliance with earlier legislation, perhaps the UK Modern Slavery Act, there were not onerous risks for businesses beyond some finger-pointing, perhaps. How's that changing, and who's going to end up in court?
I think another point that came out of your Innovation Forum conference that I was really quite shocked by was just the way the conversations moved on, particularly about the UK Modern Slavery Act. So I sensed a real change, loss of patience because of the low reporting, particularly was mentioned about the companies in the FTSE 100. People were talking about it being embarrassing and the credibility of the law being at stake. Civil society will be less supportive of disclosure laws going forward. The consultation process in Australia showed that there was much more emphasis on reporting requirements being recommended, reporting issues being required. rather than in the UK where they were voluntary. So maybe the discontent with the level of reporting in the UK could drive more strategic litigation on this. As more laws are developed, particularly across Commonwealth countries, perhaps there'll be more focus on the enforcement side. And I think we'll see a greater focus on cases in France and potentially the Netherlands as those laws are implemented, where due diligence is mandatory. So I think strategic litigation is increasingly likely, and that will be driven by perhaps the failure of enforcement in the UK.
Is it a sense that amongst perhaps the campaigning community that companies were given the chance to solve this through the Modern Slavery Act and the statements, but in some sense they've blown it? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely think that that's the case. And I think that the Canadian example is interesting to look at because they've chosen to take a very different route with this ombudsperson with very special powers for these high-risk sectors. You know, I think they're also considering legislation, but perhaps they're looking at this alternative route to see whether it's more effective in having a real impact on high-risk companies.
And as we move forward, is that then the sort of thing we're going to see more of? Specific approaches from regulators targeting particular sectors and companies, and the campaigners doing the same? Is that the sort of future, do you think, for this area?
I definitely think that the landscape is moving towards something that's a bit more diverse. So, you know, I think in previous years, the view was very much focused on these two different types of laws, different disclosure, due diligence, and that this would be driving the way forward. But actually, I think that, especially if you look at it from a global perspective, rather than just focusing on OECD countries, that we are looking at lots of different types of mechanisms that reflect the situation in those regions or countries and testing out different ways and seeing what's most effective.
Well, thanks very much, Alexandra Channer from Verisimilcroft.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian.